more.
Hey, everybody. Welcome to the Dream Big podcast. It's Bob Goff here. And for those of you that this is new to, what we've been doing for the last couple of years, and 7 million downloads. You guys, thanks for listening. What we've been talking about is ambitions. What's your ambition? What do you want? Why do you want it? And what are you going to do about it? If you wrote down three things, and I'm a big note taker, unless you're driving right now in traffic, to write down, like, what do I want? And you could say, I want to Porsche. And that's fine, but it's just going to break down. You won't spend a ton getting insurance for it. But I think most of us want like deeper relationships. We want to know like the deeper lasting things in our life. And so what I do is I bring on friends of mine who are people I respect, voices that have been important in my life. So you can just hear from my friends. And we've got a friend today. Jeannie Stevens has got a beautiful set of things going on in the Chicagoland area, and just thought you'd be interested to hear from here. So Jeannie, welcome to the podcast.
Hey, Bob, it's so good to see you and to be with all your listeners. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, this is so great. So for people that haven't met you just yet, give us the thumbnail. What is it like to be you and who are you?
I love that question because you don't ask, what do I do in the world? You ask, what is it like to be me? And what it's like to be me, to live in this container, is I am so deeply passionate about being fully alive and fully here. You know, when you just asked that question, what do I want? I want it to be said of me, she was all the way here. She lived her one full life all the way here, fully alive. So to know me is to know that I love people. I love people experiencing life and life to the fullest. What I do in the world and some of the roles that I play, I'm married to the love of my life, Jarrett, and about 12 years ago, we started a church in our living room that now meets in downtown Chicago, and it's this beautiful expression of people that are just trying to be transformed in their relationship with God. And we're a bunch of misfits that make mistakes. And so I fit in perfectly in this community. It's called Soul City Church. And we're all about living and leading and experiencing life at a soul level. I have two amazing kids, Elijah and Gigi, and they're teenagers. And so our house is filled with all kinds of fun and loud experiences all the time. And so it's a great place to live.
Yeah, I can see people as they're listening, kind of nodding their head to say, okay, you've given some data points. You have like this person that you love a lot, and you got married and you said, I do. And some people think I do means just a bunch of activity. I just do stuff for the next 60 years. I'm just going to be on the go. But that will actually steal us away sometimes from the things. I started my morning in Boise, Idaho. I've been in Salt Lake City, and now I'm in San Diego, and it isn't even noon yet. That I do part of Bob, it is getting refined right now. I'm making some changes. Mm-hmm. I actually took the button off the webpage that said, would you like Bob to come speak? Because we are burning the ships. We're just going to spend more time here. I know this idea of not like looking in the rearview mirror, but like being fully present has been a theme in your life. What are some of the things that you're learning about that?
Yeah, I love that you teased out the idea of even what does an I do look like in our lives? Because I know for me, my best I do's have eventually come to asking for some redos, you know,
and taking
something off of my website, because that thing that I was committed to doing was not allowing me to live the fullest thing that I wanted to be about in the world. So a healthy relationship, gosh, some of the relationships that I love the most in this world are the ones where I cannot just say, here's my commitments to you, but can I have a redo with you and ask for forgiveness? And I think so much of that comes down to, are we willing to live in the present moment with one another? You know, so often we're not really here. like our bodies are here. Like you think about like when teachers take attendance, right? And they call out all the names and they're like, is Bob here? You know, and you say present here, is Jeannie here? She's present, she's here. But sometimes it's just our body that's here and our being, who we are, who God created us to be is not fully here. And I kind of realized that about myself a few years ago and just some inciting incidents from feeling drained and run down and exhausted and realizing that oftentimes my body was in the room, but my heart wasn't there. My mind wasn't there. I was rehashing the past, like things that already happened, right? I was trying to change something that already took place, or I was rehearsing the future. And I was trying to, you know, control something that was gonna happen that, let's be honest, I didn't really have control over. And I started realizing I wasn't living where my feet were planted. Like I wasn't living in the here and the now. And the more I realized it, the more I discovered like the zip code of God is the present. Like if you want to experience God, you have to be here. You have to be fully connected to whoever you're with, whatever you're doing, and live your life to the fullest in this now moment, not in a moment that was or a moment that will be, but this moment.
I'm thinking about my friends at St. Quentin in this class I teach, and four times a day they take the count. And you have to go to a prearranged spot and they call out your number and you need to report, like to say your number back to them. And so if you miss the count, that's when all the sirens go off.
Right.
But the crazy thing is all they care about is if their body's there. They don't actually right. care about the rest. Doesn't make them uncaring people, but it just makes like, I'm just here to make sure your bod's still inside the walls. And I wonder if sometimes we do that. It used to be back in the day when people actually worked at an office building, they would have assigned parking spots, get this, so that the boss could find out who's not there, like right. who's not in their parking spot, hence they're not in the building. And so it can play some kind of a weird thing. So like, do you care about my bod in the chair, my bod in the walls, or do you care about like what's going on inside me? And so that question of asking people, what does it feel like to be you, is a great way for me to kind of check in more than just like you're here. A speaking event, you at church, like you're there to do something. There's the big dinner or the big whatever, and you're going to share some thoughts and ideas. And in some ways, I felt through nobody, it's just my own internal voices, I can feel like I'm just there to do a thing. And so it can feel like a little bit like you're performing, you're there to play the song or to do the thing. And I don't need everybody to check in on that, but we got to have a couple people in our lives that want to know, what does it feel like to be you? And a great hack to do with the people that you love or your kids or your coworkers is give them a pencil or some crayons and a piece of paper. Say, everybody just take 2 minutes, draw what it feels like to be you right now. We did this with this outfit that sells energy drinks, lots of them. I had them all draw what it feels like to be them. And it was really beautiful to have them hold up and say, this is it. And everybody connected at a deeper level. What do you do to get, whether it's your family or the people that you love or the people that you serve, kind of in the room? What are some strategies you're using?
Well, I love that. You mentioned the idea when your friends in St. Quentin, when they're not there, the alarms go off. And wouldn't that be such a blessing if we weren't all the way here, if some kind of alarm went off? What a beautiful thing that could be in our relationships, right? Because we feel it with one another, don't we? We feel when we're talking with somebody or we're trying to connect and they pick up their phone, right? I mean, you write about this in your amazing book, Undistracted, but we're the most distracted people ever. And when we allow one another to experience the gift of presence, there's nothing like it. When I know that you're fully dialed into me and I'm fully dialed into you, and we know there's no other place for me to be right now than to be having this conversation with my friend, Bob. It's a powerful gift that we give one another. And the way that I practice that, you know, you had people draw a picture, I ask them the question, what's here now? I just want to know what's going on with somebody right now. Like, what are you feeling in your body? What are you holding in your heart? And what are the thoughts in your mind? You know, Jesus said that we should love one another with our heart, soul, mind, and strength, right? And so obviously our bodies, our hearts, and our minds, they have something to tell us. And so when we pay attention to the sensations in our body, like, okay, why have I had this headache for 3 days now? Maybe I should pay attention to something going on in my body. What's here now? Or why have I been feeling this sadness or this excitement or this fear, whatever it is? How can I pay attention to this feeling that's going on here? And these thoughts that keep running over the ticker tape of my mind, what might they be trying to say? And how can I come here in the present moment? So that's my question. I love to ask people, what's here now? Just what's here now?
I love the that word picture of a ticker tape, you know, to just keep present. Like, what's happening? Why? Another way to think of that as you're listening is to think, what is that connected to? And one of the best ways to do that is if you have a disproportionate reaction to something that happened. It was some little thing, but it just wasn't a big deal, but you just went off. Or maybe that wasn't happening on the outside of you, but it was definitely going on the inside of you. You're like, what the heck? And to say, well, I wonder what that's connected to, because it certainly was a nickel crime. And you want to give about $3 worth of punishment for that.
That's right.
And to say, what's going on in there that this is about me? I can even think of a friendship that went a little wonky. And I was just thinking, like, why did that hurt so much? And I think what it was is it's connected to this, like, idea that I got early on in my life that I would be rejected. And so then when somebody did something that hurt my feelings a lot, that equals rejection. And that's probably why I had a disproportionate reaction to that. That's why it would just felt more than just a flag on the play. It didn't feel like an infraction. It felt like a violation.
Yeah. And I think in our relationships, we can really pay attention to what's going on. Just like you said, with that rejection, you know, I really discovered that when I was rehashing things that already happened, maybe a wound from a friend, or if it led me to things like blame or shame, unprocessed grief or bitterness or guilt, those were all ways that I was actually not living in what is, I was living in what was. And I was allowing the past to have a power over me. You know, the past is a great place to learn from. You and I both love paying attention, you know, through the works of OnSite and all the beautiful things that happen at the Oaks. It's so good to dig into our stories, but we can't live in the past. It's a terrible place to live, actually. We're meant to live in the now. And so when those things show up in our stories, like blame, shame, unprocessed grief, and bitterness and guilt, it's something to pay attention to. Or if we're out in the future, right? And we're experiencing lots of worry or anxiety, maybe even some denial or pretending, or we're feeling a sense of obligation about something, right? We're saying, oh, I should do that all the time, or we're trying to control something. Those are indicators that we're living in a lot of the what ifs.
Yeah, beautiful.
And God designed us to be in the what is right here, right now. And I love how your friend and mine, Richard Rohr, says that we don't think ourselves into new ways of living. We live ourselves into new ways of thinking.
Oh, this isn't, say that one more time.
We don't think ourselves into new ways of living. We live ourselves into new ways of thinking. And the only place where we can live is right here and right now. And that's how we start to change our stories with what was and what if, so that we can be in what is.
Yeah, that's just so well said. I know that we have these triggers, like some of my friends, really dear friends, they'll hear Richard Rohr and they'll go like, oh, alarms. They'll go like, warning, warning. And he's just a really nice guy, whether you just like agree with him or disagree with him. But I don't want to be too quick to put people in holes, like small spaces, and to say, this means that, or take whatever social issue of the day, this means that this is our position on that. What I want to do is, if we would stop hitting ourselves, maybe we'd stop hitting other people. So I think sometimes when somebody is really hard on some others around them, I don't care if you think they square with your theology or not. I'm just saying you can have great doctrine and lousy theology. I want to have great doctrine and great theology.
Yes.
And oftentimes I find that people that are hitting others are because they're hitting themselves. And I know this because I'm that guy. Like, I'm the guy being like trying to work out some things with somebody else that's wounded me. And it's because I'm hitting myself a lot. And so that idea, there have been so many retread kind of ways to describe that, but we're not pinatas.
We aren't.
Candy is not going to fall out.
That is so true. And so often we spend so much time judging one another on our orthodoxy instead of our orthopraxy. And yet we're called to live as people of love and light and to practice that in the world, right? For me to practice loving one another and letting that be the thing that comes out of who I am. And I just love, you know, I think about when I was visiting you last year at the Oaks and we were all playing in the beautiful pool and having so much fun, right? And there were beach balls all over the place. And you think about a beach ball, right? It's filled up with air. And if you try to push that beach ball underwater, it's going to pop out. It's not meant to stay under the water. And so is the same with us. We're filled with so much, so many experiences and life thoughts and different ideas and beliefs. And none of us are meant to push one another under the water, because when we push one another under, we're going to pop out in another way. And it's never going to be good. It's going to always be sideways. And so if we can start to be the kinds of people that just notice what's going on with one another and we can name it for ourselves, right? Oh, I'm feeling scared about that, or I'm feeling sad about that thing that happened, or I wonder if that person is misunderstanding why I chose to quote that person, right? If we just came out into the light and let ourselves be seen, I think we could offer one another some beautiful loving kindness and nurture. And I think that's all what we're looking for. We all want to be seen and we all want to be known.
Yes, part of it is slowing down the cadence. We have such busy lives that there's an efficiency that we're trying to get to about just making some moves. Like, I just need to get some stuff done. What I'm finding for myself, even on a day like today, is I'm trying to slow the cadence down a little bit to have a predictability. If you and I were going up some stairs, the rise is 7.5 inches. The run, like the part your foot's on, is 11.5 inches. 7.5, 11.5. Nobody's out there measuring it. But if you went 8.5, people would be tripping because there's this anticipation of the way that it's going to go. And so what I do is there's so much cadence at 63 that I built in that I want to just change it up a little bit and like slow down the cadence to actually appreciate, hey, I'm making some progress on this thing. I'm not there yet. I think of our writer friends that are beating themselves up about the words that they haven't written yet. I would just say, like, what if we delight in the ones that you have? Oh, and even this little boy that we took up Kilimanjaro, I remember he got to his high point. It wasn't actually the summit of Kilimanjaro, but it got, gosh, I forget how high he got, 15,000 feet. I mean, we got up there. But we said, this is your high point. And I didn't tell him how far he had to go. I said, look how far you've come. And hitting yourself a little bit less means pausing and to say, hey, look how far you've come. Did you know this about me, Jeannie? I don't calendar people's birthdays and anniversaries and all that. I calendar the worst day of their life. And it's not so I can call back and say, this is the worst day of your life, because that would be like the call you don't want to get. But to remind myself and to call them or drop them a note to say, well, I was just reflecting on this, and to say, look how far you've come. And I don't tell them this is the anniversary of that. But what if we were doing that with a view towards not going back to the scene of the crime, but to measuring the progress? And even doing that for ourselves, to say, take a low point, something where it got, where you felt a lot of uncertainty. I remember at one point feeling actually kind of hunted by somebody. And it was a really weird feeling. It was like the first time I'd ever experienced that. And then by getting real with what that felt like to be kind of hunted by somebody, that I could realize that, wow, I'm making progress. I don't feel that emotion. I still feel some other things, but not as strong as I felt before. And I don't feel the pain, that take your breath away, can't take a full breath kind of feel. I'm not feeling that. I'm feeling a little bit more. I'm still got some like leftover stuff, but I want to see it so I can understand it, so I can bring it to Jesus to fix.
I love that you mark important days in people's lives as the worst day, because in some ways that's the turning point day, isn't it? That's the day of waking up. That's the day, hopefully, of looking at all of the light that could be streaming in and saying, wow, this feels like the bottom. I feel like I'm sucking the rust off the bottom of the barrel, right? And yet there's nowhere else to go but up. And that's such a turning point moment for people. And my dear friends and your friends, that have done the beautiful work of recovery, they often say these words, the work works if you work it. And when we start to do the work out of those turning point days, and we start to practice presence, like what's here now, what's here with this pain, what's here with this loss, what's here with this thing that I never thought I would be facing, but here I am now facing it. God, what do you want to show me? What do you want to do? How do you want to grow me? Who do you want me to become? I love that you told the story of going up Kilimanjaro, because I had the privilege a few years ago to climb Kili. And I did. And, my story is also that I didn't summit. And I remember the sun coming up. I was probably about 900 feet from the top. And my oxygen levels were just dipping quick because the air is so thin. And the guide that was with me just said, hey, Jeannie, I think you need to call it. And I have that part of me. I'm an 8 on the Enneagram, so I'm a challenger. I'm like, no, I can keep going. I can keep going. And he just said, but what if this was all you were meant to do? And I stood on the side of that mountain and watched the sun come up. And I never touched the sign at the top. And it was exactly what it was meant to be for my story. Because I was able to look down the mountain and go, look how far I've come. Look how far I've come. And in that present moment, I just felt like here I am above the clouds. It's me and God and my wonderful guide here that has brought me thus far. And I've done what I came to do. And I think we make it about the top, don't we? We make it about touching this thing of success, or like you said, what I haven't done yet, the words I haven't written, or the people I haven't led, or the experiences I haven't had. But when we get to live in the present moment, we get to carry it all up and hold it in our hearts and go, wow, look at all that has happened. Look at all the beautiful things that are here in this present moment. It might not be what I wanted it to be, but it is what it is. And God has been faithful thus far. God will be faithful in the future.
Yeah, like every book in the Bible, the first couple sentences are usually who begat you, or or hi, how are you?
Who went before you, right?
It's always about verse 6 where it gets good in Philippians 1:6. It said that God started something in you and he's going to complete it. But I get this idea that we need to show up and to say, I'm open to starting something beautiful. Like, what is it that you're already doing? And so for people, whether you're stuck in traffic or you're pulled over, or you're out on a jog, I want you to see, what are some of the things that God's already started in you? What are some moves you can make? And then maybe if you're on this bender of efficiency in everything you do or maximizing, I wonder if you just chilled out a little bit and say, like, what would happen if I just kind of got my head on a swivel to see what is around me? Instead of asking, how is my life working for me? Maybe you'd start asking, how is my life working for the people around me? Because my life's usually working great for me, but I've actually had this conversation with my wife and kids and said, how is my life working for you? And they said, actually, it's not working that great for us. And there be patience for the people that love you. But what a great act of kindness, instead of making it all about me and how do I feel and all that, maybe asking the people that you love the most, how's my life make you feel? Does it make you feel anxious? I know I love all the spontaneity and surprises and confetti and unicorns and all that, but how does that make some of the people around me feel? And that's not, there's no shame in it, just a bunch of wisdom.
It is. And I love asking the people in my life, what's it like to be on the other side of me? You know, what's it like to be in relationship with me? And I also love asking the question, if I were to know you, if I were to really know you in this now moment, what would you want me to know? And to really listen, to really be with them on whatever it is that they really want me to know about them. And another beautiful question to ask the people in your life is not just, if I were to really know you, what would you want me to know about you? But if I were to really know you, what don't you want me to know about you? Because oftentimes it's the things we're trying to keep hidden, right? The things that we don't want ourselves to let out of the bag. And yet those are the parts of ourselves that actually need to be seen, that need to be loved, that need to be embraced, that need to be told, it's okay. It's okay who you are.
And it isn't always some big gnarly secret that you've got.
It isn't.
Oftentimes you just don't want to be a buzzkill, that you've got some stuff going on and you just don't want to be like the bummer in the room. But to have one person to say, hey, listen, I can take that. I think we've all experienced people that go too deep too fast.
Yes.
Like they'll say in the second sentence, so tell me the gnarliest thing in your life. I feel like I just need to know you're safe and you actually care. You're not looking for a news clipping. But to just kind of consistently show up so you aren't just like, I just read the room. Just kind of use them.
We all need just one or two people like that in our lives. It doesn't need to be the whole circle. Yes.
Well, Jeannie, I'm so proud of you. The book is What's Here Now? How to Stop Refreshing the Past and Rehearsing the Future and Start Receiving the Present. I hope this whetted your appetite for Jeannie's book. And I hope you'll just join me in reading it. Get your highlighter out. You've experienced there's going to be a bunch to highlight already. But get it. And then ask yourself. Don't just agree with everything that you've said. Write something down, something that Shimmer, that Jeannie had to say. Write that down and then reflect it on that. A little bit. I can't think of one time Jesus asked his friends to agree with him. He said, like, let's go then do something like with this and figure out what your next courageous move is. Well, Jeannie, thanks for jumping on the podcast.
Bob, love you. Thanks so much.
Thanks. You guys have been listening to the Dream Big podcast, and we will continue to show up. We have another podcast that we alternate in called The Writing Room, which is kind of fun. And we bring authors in. So whether you think you're going to be an author and auth, that's not a word, or you're just interested in people that are doing some of that and you think, I've got some things to write down, I hope you'll tune into both. All right, you guys, have a great week.